The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, it's Friday, and we made it. It's always interesting when I see stories come across the desk about some ancient archaeological discovery, whether it's the Mayas or somewhere in the Holy Land or wherever else. There are a lot of things that we know next to nothing about. I would say we only know about maybe 5% of what really happened in the past, what our ancestry is all about. It'd be hard to say that, honestly, that we know more than that. And if you've ever read Michael Cremo, that's C-R-E-M-O, Michael Cremo's book, Hidden History of the Human Race, you'll understand that there is so much that has been kept from us deliberately with malice aforethought. You're not good enough. You don't need to know. So shut up. And once in a while we find things, thanks to Harry Cooper, about World War II history, which is one of the most truly monumental cover-ups, I would suggest, in all of our recorded history. It's that bad. We just don't know. Oh, we know the dates and the alleged battles and things, but there's so much more. And if you've been a follower of Harry's work with SharkHunters.com, his appearances on this program for years. It's a treasury of discovery, in many cases, of our past. And we have a right to that past, and thanks to Harry, we've got a new discovery tonight. This is fascinating. I was able to see the pictures earlier, and this is another piece of the puzzle. So, hey, causing trouble again, huh?
That's what I do best.
Yeah, that's what the girls told me.
back in the old days, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, the T-shirt. It was an old T-shirt on an older lady, and it said, I couldn't make it out. I had to get up reasonably close, and it said, I couldn't make out the second word. It was vibed. I finally saw the first three letters as S-U-R. I survived being on a boat with Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah, there were quite a few. It was a fun time living on the boat in the Bahamas.
Yeah. Well, good for you. You did it, and very few people ever get a chance to do the things that you've done, and they can't say you got shortchanged. You punched your ticket and you got in. Yeah.
You're not kidding. I have been so fortunate. I've done so many things in my life. In the Air Force, I commanded a six-man team loading hydrogen bombs onto heavy bombers. I got my black belt in judo. I got, I worked for a short time for the mafia, but that's another story. And the CIA had me go overseas three times, once to the Soviet Union, once to the Russian Republic, and once to the People's Republic of China. And as you know, I drove Grand, well, the super speedways. I spent Sunday afternoons at 190 miles an hour. And then I sold everything and bought my sailboat and advertised for female crew / companion. Got over 200 replies and left Chicago with a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead. There were 24, 24, and 25, and I was 40. It was a great time. The best part about it, though, Jeff, as I've told you before, bouncing around on a boat in the islands, there was no stress. No stress. You didn't have to be anywhere at a set time. You didn't have to fight the traffic, and the expense was next to nothing. I had no mortgage payment because I didn't have a house, no car payments. I didn't have cars. I didn't have to pay the electric bill, the gas bill, the water bill, tolls on the toll road, nothing. All we had to buy was food. And the wind is free.
Yeah, well, you were dialed in to Mother Nature, and that's pretty darn special.
Yeah, it was nice. I think I told you before, there were times, almost every morning, I get up nice and early. I always get up early. And I'd be sitting in the cockpit with a hot mug of tea in my hand, watching the sun come up behind the palm trees 100 yards away, and I'm thinking, do I want to run on the beach? Do I want to go swimming? Do I want another cup of tea? Oh, put off the decision till later. Or there's an island a mile away. We got to go to that island tomorrow, next week, next month, whenever we get around to it. I didn't even wear a wristwatch.
That's called freedom. Freedom. Yeah. You were free.
Unfortunately, there's no pension involved. So
yeah. Look at the headlines now. Come on. I mean, I don't expect people to read all the stories, but just look at the headlines. What's going on now? Man beaten to death by mob for giving girlfriend a black eye.
Yeah. What can I say? But anyhow, when I was in the islands, that's what got me hooked on the history of the U-boats. We came across Darby Island, where the locals said was a place that it wasn't a supply dump, but it was an operating plantation, and they gave fresh water and food to German U-boats. Now, we've never been able to prove or disprove, but that was what got me started. And now there's two young college guys, Matt and Will. Matt just became a member of Shark Hunters a week or two ago. They're going out to Darby Island and to Nassau to do a documentary on it, and I'm helping them. Not going with them, a scheduling problem, but they're going to interview me at the end of this month, probably in Orlando. We'll pick a nice place for a backdrop. And welcome aboard to Laura in New York. Just joined Shark Hunters about an hour ago.
Good.
Been a busy day. And Little John, I'll be back to you tomorrow with the answer to your question. Little John's been a member of Shark Hunters for some time, and he was with us last time we went to southern Germany. And what else would you call him, Little John, but Little John? His name is John. He's 6'6", 270 pounds. What else would you call him?
That reminds me of an Errol Flynn movie.
Yep. One of the greatest movies of all time. And to think they wanted to cast James Cagney as Robin Hood.
Oh, God. Hard to believe. Yeah. Hard to believe.
He was great in some of his films, but in Robin Hood, nobody could have done it But Errol Flynn.
No. Of course not.
Welcome to Sherwood, Your Majesty. Chop, chop.
Now, Olivia de Havilland passed, I think, didn't she, a few years ago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they made that movie in 1939.
Right.
And that was, 81, 82 years ago?
Yeah, she died last July. That's right.
Okay. She was a great actress.
Yeah, yeah. Her sister, people don't know this, well, older people might, was Joan Fontaine.
I didn't know that. And I'm an older person.
You want to know anything else? Just ask. Sorry.
Well, I know. You spend a lot of time on the air, so you've got a plethora of knowledge there.
Well, I've actually spent time with Joan Fontaine.
No kidding.
Well, I don't want anybody to think that, but I spent several hours with her.
No, I don't mean to think that you were intimate, but you met her.
No. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I interviewed her, and we talked. She very, how can I say this? What's the best way without making it sound like she was a snob? She was very elegant and high class. No, not aloof. She was very elegant and high class.
Okay.
She was a very classy lady, and
right.
I'm sure her sister was the same. She almost had... You could almost see her as having been born in England. She had a hint of a British accent, but I think it came from her movie roles and things. But anyway, she was very nice, pleasant. So there you go. And Jane Russell, Howard Hughes, the brilliant aeronautical engineer and designer, designed her bra and put her in the movie. Hell did he buy? Paramount? Anyway, he bought one of the major movie studios and made that movie The Outlaw, where they who else was in that movie, The Outlaw? I can't remember. But the movie wasn't released for 3 or 4 years because of she had some cleavage shots, and it was perfectly acceptable.
Cleavage was bad news back in them days.
Back in those days.
The guy who played opposite her, the guy who was, Billy the Kid or whatever he was supposed to be, he got blackballed. His name was Jack, I can't remember his last name, but he wound up in a TV, made-for-TV movie series called Judge Roy Bean, Law West of the Pecos. But he couldn't get a job after that, after The Outlaw. And cleavage, geez, that one scene where she's laying back in the haystack, there's not much left to the imagination there. And as I recall, it was a black and white movie.
I think you're right. And I was at a party with her, too, once. And very nice... she was older, but just looked terrific, and they have a way of handling themselves. The real people. She wasn't a hustling movie starlet, bed hopping bimbo. She was a lady. She had paid her dues. She was a professional actress, and it was very interesting.
There we go. I just Googled it. The guy is Jack Butel.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, right, because he got blackballed.
No, that's it.
Let's see. Well, that's enough. I'm not going to...
The film,
it
says here...
She's down there topless in some of them scenes.
Yeah. Well, you know, now, that's a joke. I mean...
Yeah.
It says in the review here, the film was notorious in its day because of producer-director Howard Hughes' concentration on newcomer Jane Russell's cleavage.
Well, he was concentrating on it, for sure.
Yeah,
Wasn't he banging her?
If I knew, I wouldn't say.
She was only 18, I think, when that movie was made.
Is grass green? Here's another one. Al Teitelbaum, who had the biggest fur business in Hollywood, furrier to the stars, they called him, Al Teitelbaum. He was a friend of mine for the last 12 years of his life. He made furs at his Sunset Boulevard furrier shop, and that's been back when furs were still okay, and I guess they're kind of making a comeback now. But that's, he worked with Howard Hughes on designing a special fur for Jane. And he was telling Al how he wanted it done. He was there. He came over. Very secretive kind of a guy. And interesting story. He knew exactly what he wanted, and his instincts were correct, Al told me. It was just a beautiful fur. Al had... there's an old story about how if you want to know what's going on, you go to ask a hairdresser if you're a woman, or if you're a guy, you go ask the barber. They know. Mm-hmm. They hear all the stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, people talk to their barbers.
That's right. Al Teitelbaum knew almost everything about everybody. He knew them all, from Jack Benny to Clark Gable. He knew them all. And the movie studio heads, Jack Warner, he knew all of them because they'd all come in and they'd say, Al, I got to have a fur for my friend. And he'd bring a photograph in. Here she is. What do you suggest? And anyway, Al would make a fur. And then he'd come back, this studio executive, Harry Cohn, Jack Warner, didn't matter, come back a week or two later and say, Al, I got to have one for my wife, too. Make something up and let me know.
Yeah, right.
That's how they get it.
Don't get them mixed up, yeah.
Yeah, don't get them.
Guys with that kind of money, they can afford that. Like the old joke, the guy and his wife are in a dinner club having dinner, and their friend George walks in with this gorgeous broad on his arm, and the wife says, wait a minute, who's that? That's not George's wife. And her husband says, well, it's George's mistress. Oh, the wife gets so upset, and the husband says, well, wait a minute. George has, he's got a lot of money. He and his wife live in a big, beautiful house. His wife has a new car, has everything she needs, and she knows about the mistress, and she's okay with it. And then he points to a beautiful girl sitting at the end of the bar. And he says, I'll be honest with you, that's my mistress. So what do you think about that? And the wife stumbles and thinks for a minute, and then she says, well, I think our mistress is a lot better than George's mistress. This is when you laugh here, Rents. This is when you laugh. Is this mic on?
Yeah, it's on. I'm doing some work here. I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking up Jane Russell here.
Okay.
Here's a... here, this is fun. This is a little... We got time for this. This is a little preview from the movie The Outlaw, which was filmed in 1943 at the height of the war. And
right.
It wasn't released for, I think, five years later or something.
I didn't know that part.
It was so hot, the smoke was coming out of the film cans.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It was really suggestive, and back in those days, that was pretty wild stuff.
Nationwide release.
You couldn't even say hell on the movies.
No. 1946, so they kept it on the shelf for 3 years.
Yeah,
here.
Until the war was over.
Let's go back and listen to 2 minutes, and you'll hear lovely Jane in the movie The Outlaw.
Just got off the stagecoach.
Do you want me and some of the boys to come along with you?
He's my best friend. As long as I'm sheriff around here, the place is his.
Nice little horse you got here, sonny.
I think so.
Somebody stole him from me in Sakura.
What's your name?
William Bonney.
Really the kid, huh?
Put your hands up.
The great Doc Holliday. Getting someone else to help him. And a policeman at that.
Doc, you're not going to back out on me.
I'm afraid I am, Dad.
I want the two of you out of this town by sundown.
Sundown!
And I'd like to speak to you for a minute.
He's been hanging around trying to talk Garrett into giving him a job as a deputy.
Listen, Dad, he pulled on Billy first.
How do you know?
His gun was on the floor.
Are you going to put up a fight?
I'll tell you one thing, Garrett. I ain't going to jail for no killing I was pushed into.
Billy the Kid, he didn't like people. Something, he kept shooting people.
He didn't have a lot of time in life to like or dislike anybody. He was out of this world, he was 21 years old when he was killed, wasn't he?
Something like that, yeah. Here comes James.
Take it easy, Pat. That kid's got a bullet in him. He ain't going very far.
Billy the Kid was shot. He didn't shoot quick enough one time.
Going very far.
Who's that?
This is Billy the Kid. He's got a bad one on the left side. Now do your best for this boy.
How's Billy? Looks like he's having a chill. You get out of here and shut the door. Have you gone crazy?
How'd I get here?
Doc brought you.
Are you Doc's girl? What do you know about that?
Say, is there anything of mine you don't cotton to?
If you and I are bound to fight sooner or later, I'd rather do it now and have it over with. But when it's over, and however it turns out, son, no hard feeling.
No hard feelings. Howard Hughes presents The Outlaw.
Yeah, no hard feelings. I'm just going to shoot you full of holes. I hope you take it in the way I meant.
That's right. No problem. That's right. All right. Now, what were we going to do tonight? Something about history?
Yeah, something about history. I remember reading that somewhere. This is some interesting stuff coming out here. There we go. I was putting a push pin into my map of South America. Push pin. I got stuff hanging on the walls all over the place. That's a map of South America. I've got other maps of the underground bunker complex over Salzburg and another one around Berlin. My place looks like an explosion in the public library. I got stacks of paper all over the place, things pinned to the wall, including a picture of the greatest president of our lifetime until recently, Ronald Reagan. Life-size picture on my wall of Ronald Reagan right next to two nose art dollies. One is Wonder Woman, who's topless, and the other one is Catwoman, who's almost topless. My wife got them for me. Figures it belongs in a man's office.
Now, that's an old-fashioned lady.
Yeah. And then on the other wall, I've got a picture of Christ with the Sacred Heart that my son Sean got me. And, you know, remember, he's the one whose special needs and the so-called expert said he would never be able to do or understand anything. He picked that out for me. Oh, I got to tell you, I just put up a new TV set yesterday, and I couldn't figure the damn thing out. I'm poking around buttons, and the TV ain't working. I've been at it for like 5 minutes. Sean comes by, grabs the thing out of my hand, says, "Kimmy," punched one button. TV is up and running. He handed me back the controller and walked out of the room shaking his head.
That's kids. I don't know what it is. They have an intuitive skill when it comes to electronics and digital lifestyle things. Yeah, they know. I don't know. Simple. It's designed for them.
Awesome.
I can't figure it out.
Name is Sean, S-E-A-N. It's Irish. It means gift from God. And that's my son.
Very good. Very good. All right. Now, we'll take a little break. We'll come right back, and we're going to talk about a new discovery. Not an old discovery. A new discovery. This is
a new one.
Yes. All right. We'll do that in a minute. Hold on. Let's get right back to who used to say this? All seriousness aside. I forget who used to say that. Doggone it.
Sounds like something W.C. Fields would say.
No. Steve Allen. I think it was Steve Allen. Yes, I think it was. What a funny man. Do you know that they don't have many of his programs? He had such incredibly humorous programs. Don Knotts, Tom Poston. Remember the people he used to have on his program?
Don Knotts, that guy was around forever. I remember as a kid, before there was such a thing called TV, and there was a show called Bobby Benson of the B-Bar-B. In other words, it was a young kid whose parents died or something, and he inherited a big ranch down in the Big Bend part of Texas. Now, this was before TV now, and he had a foreman named Windy Wales, and that was Don Knotts back in the 40s.
Funny. Yeah, Steve Allen did skits. Steve Allen was a master creator of humor, and
right.
He was the original Tonight Show before Johnny, and
right.
I guess after Jack Parr, I think that's what it was. Anyway,
yeah,
Jack Parr
committed suicide, as I recall.
I don't remember that. Let me find out. Now you got me wondering.
Back to the Google.
Jack Parr died in 2004. He was born in 1918.
Holy cow. Well, that wasn't him.
84 years old. Anyway. Okay. Steve Allen did these wonderfully funny Tonight Show episodes every Monday through Friday. And one of their deals was man on the street interviews. And they'd go to Tom Poston, Don Knotts, and it was like a little family thing. It was hilarious. Anyhow, they would record Steve Allen's programs on videotape, play them back that night, and then the next day record right over the night before his program. They
hardly any of his... That was pretty common back in those days, though.
That's right. They would reuse the tape.
Yeah, unfortunately, but that's the way it was. And you remember when the early stages of videotapes came out, you had VHS and you also had beta type, two different styles, forms, etc.
Well,
we've lived through a lot. I've lived through a lot.
You have. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't know half the things.
I never met so many famous people as you, though. I did meet Jerry Lee Lewis.
Who
I think is one of the two greatest rock and rollers of all time. Him and Little Richard, I think, are the two greatest. But after his fall from grace, when people found out he was married to his 13-year-old cousin, never a good thing for your press to find that out. But he was doing one-night performances all over the place, and he stopped at a place called the Manor Lounge in Stone Park, Illinois, when I lived there. And during an intermission, he and I sat on the right front fender of his stretched Lincoln Continental and just talked about life in general. He's not a stupid hillbilly. He was a very intelligent guy, but apparently marrying his 13-year-old cousin didn't seem like a bad idea to him at the time.
Is there something wrong with that, Harry?
In the press, yeah.
Oh, I
see. Out in the press.
Just kidding. All right, that's called pedophilia. Just a little pedophilia. But he was big, and he was able to get around it, though. It didn't destroy his career. It set it back a little.
It knocked the hell out of his career.
He kept at it, though.
Oh, yeah. He was making $10,000 a night prior to this, and then suddenly he was getting $100 a night for him and his whole crew. He had, I think, four guys with him in the band. And but that was an interesting bar, lounge, whatever. Mm-hmm. Once a month, they would have big-name people in there. Everly Brothers were there.
You see them?
Yeah, but I didn't sit and talk with those guys, so...
Did you like? Were they good? And I bet they were good in person.
Definitely, definitely. And they had their lead singer in their regular bar band was a little short guy who had a wooden leg and a patch over his eye because he had gotten in a car wreck, and he got some dolly knocked up, and he ran off to California and cut a record called Sylvia's Mother and went by the name of Dr. Hook in the Medicine Show.
Yes, I think I remember that name. Very good. All right, I'm sure everyone's sitting on the edge of their seats waiting for the next anecdote.
Yeah, they're waiting. Will these two dummies ever shut up and get on with the program? That's probably what's going through somewhere.
All right. Go, please, to the link under Admiral Cooper's name. Pull up that page that Norberto has deftly assembled for tonight's program. We have a lot of pictures. Now, this
he does
is
a hell of a good job.
Yes, they don't get any better than Norberto.
Yeah, I was going to say a whole lot better than what you had before.
He's great. All right, now we're not going to nail this location down, except to tell you it is in Siberia. But don't go looking for it, because you ain't going to find it. All right?
Right. So, well, let me give a little prep here without revealing where it is. We know that Adolf Hitler did not die in the bunker. He did not commit suicide in the bunker. He did not die in Germany. He died in South America. He left in summer of 1945. And contrary to what a couple of the so-called historians wrote in their books, he did not go by submarine, U-530. I knew the skipper of U-530. He was a member of Shark Hunters. He was on a combat mission off New York, and the war ended, and they headed for South America. Hitler flew down there on a JU-390, which had 7,000 or more mile range, and
Think about that, 7,000 miles. And if you got a friendly place to stop off and refuel, it becomes 14,000 miles.
It could have been. But they ultimately landed in Uruguay on this big estancia. I was there some years ago, you know, with our friend Martin.
Yeah.
And it was exactly like the handwritten chart that Pizarro had dug up for us. And from there, Hitler went on down to Bariloche, actually Villa Langostura, where he lived for 10 years. And he went down there in the middle of winter, which was the middle of summer up here because the seasons are reversed. He got down there in the dead of winter. And he lived there at Inalco was the name of his town, which somebody told me is Spanish. It means a water's edge or some such thing. I don't speak Spanish.
Well, that's what they called this, hidden ranch that he was headquartered at for those 10 years, Inalco.
It was near the little town of
Angostura. Yes.
Yeah. Villa Langostura is about 10 kilometers away, and the place was built in the closing months of the war by the Mercedes family, allegedly, as a recreational place. It's in a beautiful area right on the shore of a lake on a cut going up, big lake, and the Andes Mountains are behind it.
Yeah,
just like Bavaria. And this apparently was a place that the executives were going to take their secretaries for long weekends or whatever, but it was never used until Hitler moved there. And they were there for 10 years, not only Hitler and Eva Braun, but they had a staff of about 80, including security, ranch hands, because they had their own ranch and farm there, just like when they were back in Germany on the Obersalzberg. Everything that was consumed by the party officials was grown right there on the mountain. That way they didn't have to worry about somebody poisoning them. So anyhow, when they landed in South America, the air crew obviously wasn't going to go back to Germany, so they scattered all over South America. And one of the pilots had this hacienda, and he passed away a few years ago, and apparently nobody paid any attention to his hacienda, and it was abandoned. And it's just now been spotted by our friend Martin. Mm-hmm. And we want to get down there before the looters get there. We never take anything except video and photos. That's it. We never take souvenirs or anything. So we want to film this before it gets destroyed by looters, and you'll see why as we go through some of this. And apparently this pilot didn't have family to give it to down there, because it's
right.
As you see the photos, you're gonna see that it is really unused. There's a thick layer of dust on all sorts of stuff.
Probably lived pretty much by himself. And you know the interesting thing about Mr. Hitler living with Eva Braun in the Inalco, what do you call it, a ranch? I don't know, whatever. It was a hidden estate is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
He lived there for 10 years. And maybe, other than his childhood, the longest continuous residence he had in his life.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And maybe it wasn't by choice. You know, we have determined that Bormann was pulling all the strings. Bormann had the money. Bormann had control. Bormann was in charge the last parts of the war, because he pretty well overrode everything, Hitler. And once they got to South America, he had all the money, which is why all the Germans that went down there, thousands of them, were very well protected, because Bormann was handed money over to Juan Perón by the bucketful. And then Evita, on her 1947 Rainbow Tour of Europe, which was 2 years after the war ended, and she was palling around with Otto Scorsini, and you read whatever you want into that palling around thing. Remember, she used to be a prostitute. And somehow she managed to transfer a whole lot of money out of Bormann's account into Juan Perón's accounts. You know, not Bormann's account, but accounts that Bormann controlled. Even though down in South America, in Buenos Aires, Martin Bormann and Juan Perón had joint checking accounts together. But Evita managed to shift huge amounts of money into Perón's account out of the money that Bormann controlled. Remember, when during the war, Perón was just a poor colonel. And a year after the war ended, he was president of Argentina. He had three mansions. We photographed them, and we wrote about them in our follow-on book. I forget. I think it was Hitler and the Secret Alliance.
Right.
I have four books in the Hitler Escape series. And in that book, Hitler and the Secret Alliance, I think that's the one. We went all through Buenos Aires photographing all the houses, et cetera, with the addresses, the house where Mengele lived until he moved out of Buenos Aires, pictures of Mengele. And you will draw a very close comparison with Mengele and Joe Biden, because there's a picture of him and his host sitting in chairs on the front deck, and there's a little 10-year-old girl, and Mengele has his arm around her, and his hand is down a little below her belt line, and she looked a little terrified.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Well, look, there's some real sick people on this planet. I don't care what political party they're aligned with, what they call themselves. Sickness is sickness. Nobody has an exclusive license on it. It's not a surprise.
When our daughter was growing up, we decided that any of her boyfriends, we'd invite them in. I'd show them my weapons collection and introduce them to a couple of my guys that I used when I was collecting hard-to-collect debts for the mustaches, and then say, go ahead, have a nice time tonight. Don't do anything that's going to get you hurt.
That's certainly a statement from a loving father. Nothing wrong with that.
You betcha. I told my daughter, I don't know how many times, I'm going to make sure she never runs into a guy like I used to be with before I got married.
Right. Good. All right, Dad. Good job. All right.
Hey,
let's.
You got to defend your children. You got to give them the proper upbringing.
Well, that's what being a parent is. Come on.
You got to keep them safe and grow them up straight.
Keep them healthy and then wish them the damn best and be there if they need
help. Yeah, right. My kids. kids have never done drugs. Well, Megan thinks she's cool now. She drinks wine after work. That's cool. Okay, Megan, mm-hmm. That's fine. But neither smoke, no drugs. Straight kids.
I don't do drugs. I quit yesterday. I'm done.
Oh, okay.
Done with
I never started. And cigarettes,
you never inhaled.
I tried one when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I got halfway through my first cigarette in high school, and I thought, you got to be dumber than a box of rocks to do this.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
When I was driving race cars, boy, I drank a hell of a lot of hard liquor and smoked big black cigars.
Well, that's,
I left all that behind me decades ago.
Keep your foot on the accelerator better. All right.
Yeah.
We got just a million of them, don't we? Right.
Yeah, shut up, Harry, and get back to topic.
Okay, and let's just start out here. Now, picture, we have at least 3 minutes. Picture number one. All right.
Yep.
Picture
Main
number
gate.
One. Through this gate came... Look at the... I don't know what you call the things on either side of the gate. What do you... The post? I don't know what you call them, but there's a name for them. And look at the architecture. Look at the top... The openings looks like kind of medieval battlements, if you will, on a castle.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah. And I'm not as dumb as I sound. And so stop laughing. It's not nice. Go ahead and laugh.
That's what my crew chief used to say about me. Nobody ever called my driver dumb and didn't mean it.
Didn't mean it. Okay. So those are Middle East battlement kind of protrusions at the top. Obviously not a Latin architectural expression, okay? This came
For sure.
from Europe, all right? This is European. And there's a beautiful weeping willow tree behind there, that big old weeping willow. Look at that. Nice. All right, so through this gate came dot, 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 dot. That's your cue.
Along this path, this is the path from the gate around the back side of the house.
That's
and then
picture number two. Over, yeah.
Number two, right? And then we go to number three, and we pass the opening to the cellar. Remember, the older homes had the cellar opening to the outside. Most of them didn't have an entrance to the cellar from inside, or if they did, they had inside and outside. But look at the shutters on the window. They're starting to show that nobody's there. They're getting cracked and beat up.
Oh, places absolutely abandoned. Yeah.
Yeah, and the foundation down around the lower corner there is starting to erode.
Right.
So then we go on to number four. Who lived here? These are some of the outbuildings. Okay, we know who lived here. We're not going to say his name. We have it, thanks to Pizarro. God bless him. I wish he hadn't left.
Checked out too soon. Talk about libraries. What a library.
Oh, the guy was just
knowledge.
So incredibly full of information, and he was head of something called the Alpha Task Force, and they all lived in Germany, and they were digging out stuff that nobody's ever heard of. But then one day he got a bruise on his leg. They took him to the hospital, and doggone, they said he had sepsis and died.
You're a little suspicious, Harry.
Damn suspicious.
Just a little.
Yeah. And now his son has buttoned up all the archives. I won't let anybody see it. Bummer.
Are you on terms with the son at all?
No. When I first met him was 1988. We were going up the road in the car. Pizarro mm-hmm. was driving. I was on the right side. Pizarro's mm-hmm. wife was behind him, and the mm-hmm. son was about 10 at the time, I think, behind me, and the little creep kept pulling the back of my hair. And, you know, his mother says, oh, isn't he cute? No, he's not cute. He's a little jerk. But then I had no contact with him at all until after his father died. And I asked him if we could still rely on him for history. history. And he said, oh, I'm locking up my father's archives. I said, no, I don't want your father's archives. I just want to know if you'll help with the research like your father did. And he gave me a kind of a curt answer. So I emailed back to him and told him that he has dishonored his father's name. And for some reason, he hasn't answered me.
What about the wife? Gone?
That was another thing. Back in 1988, they were getting along fine. A couple of years later, he thought she was having an affair and was going mm-hmm. to poison him. So mm-hmm. He was about 6'4". He went from about 250 pounds down to 150 pounds. And then he found out, yeah, she was cheating on him. So they got divorced, but she was cheating on him with another woman. So the whole situation over there was a little unique.
Well, not some more. Not these days.
I guess.
No. All right. Admiral
picture
Cooper
five.
And I. Say again? We got break
picture
here.
Five. All right.
Well, let's do picture five. All right, number five.
Okay, and then it's break time. Yeah. This shows the front, the main entrance. Look how it's growing over. Grass is starting to get there. There's no gardener. The shutters are starting to look shabby. The overhead, there's boards missing
shutters
from the overhead.
Are falling down.
So, yeah, we need to get down there and take pictures of it before it falls apart. We need to get an angel to give us a ton of money to go buy it.
No,
that,
we need to buy
Inalco. Both of them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, we'll come right back and rejoin picture number five. Hitler himself visited there, and that's the evidence. And we'll talk more about that with Harry as we continue after the top of the hour break. Glad you're along tonight. Many pictures ahead. Be right back.